thing about Ballinger is that he's going to need to hit immediately in order to avoid getting sent back down. And, you know, if he does that, then he could end up being, you know, the most valuable fantasy rookie of 2017. But if he doesn't, then we might not see him again until July or August.
Welcome to episode 130 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by my usual co-hosts, Brett Sayer, BP's managing editor. Brett, welcome back to the show, buddy. It's good to have you. How was your vacation?
It was good. It's good to be back. I'm alive.
You know who else is back and still alive? Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy Team. Mike, how you doing tonight?
Yeah, we survived a Gray's podcast, too, which, depending on your perspective, we had Gray Albright on last week. I either owe you an apology or you loved it. That those seem to be the two responses. People either loved it or hated it. It was a little more freeform than what we usually do on the show.
So would you say there were no gray areas in terms of the response?
I would not say that.
Yeah, Brett, you missed a heck of a show, but... We're going to do Expert Fab tonight. We're going to talk about some players who are off to ridiculous starts, like Eric Thames. Brett, we haven't had you on in a couple weeks. Eric Thames has added 10 home runs during that time. What do you think about Eric Thames right now?
He's pretty good.
Fact.
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing about Thames isn't the power. It's the discerning, plate discipline. It's extremely impressive. I mean, we've talked about him on the podcast before, and you know, we've both advocated for him and made light of his Korean stats because of, you know, the types of parks and pitchers that are in the KBO, but. This has been a really, really impressive April. And I think the one thing I don't think this should do, which I think we might run into a little bit because this is just natural, is that, this is an Eric Thames thing. This is not a Korean import thing.
Yeah.
Where I worry people are gonna get way too excited is the next guy that comes over from being a 40 home run hitter in Korea. I mean, Byung-ho Park is still probably at some watering hole in Rochester right now, trying to figure out what he did wrong. But there is the ability for players to do what Eric Thames did in Korea, but you know, they don't have to be that good. I mean, I'm not waiting for the Yumeko Navarro contract to come through.
That's a shock.
Yeah, Jim Adusi, don't race to pick him up in your mixed league just because he's, you know, playing for the Tigers now.
I think Eric Thames is a borderline, you know, I think he's a back end of the top 10 first baseman, I think, going forward for the rest of the year.
It's probably higher than that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go that much higher than that just because I think the top six to seven are pretty locked in. So I think, you know, I'm not talking about necessarily including his April in there because yes, he might finish as a top you know, 3 to 5 first baseman if he performs like a top 8 to 10 first baseman going forward. But going forward, I think him being, you know, in the back end of the top 10 among first basemen, I think is totally reasonable.
Brett, who would you rather have at this point, Jose Abreu or Eric Thames? Rest of season.
I'd rather have Abreu.
Okay. Thames or Carlos Santana?
I'd rather have Thames.
That's about the line.
My two quick points are, the one negative about Thames, and I believe in him, and I believe, you know, the changes are legitimate, but, you know, 7 of those 10 home runs have been off of a bad Reds pitching staff. Now, granted, he gets to face him, you know, them another 13 times this year, so it's not like, you know, he's not going to see bad pitchers. But the other side of it is, you know, if he doesn't hit another home run this month and hits 5 home runs a month the rest of the season, that's a 35 home run guy, and that looks completely realistic to me at this point. And he's got a shot at 40. So that to me is what you're looking at. You're looking at a 35 home run hitter in all likelihood, whose average, you know, shouldn't be awful from what we've seen. And that to me is the line with Thames. You know, putting the comps aside, I think that's what I expect from him, you know, assuming health, of course.
Speaking of comps, I thought the best tweet I've seen on the whole Thames situation is from Jonathan Judge of the BP Stats team. He wrote that Eric Thames reminds us that being, quote, Bonzian has little to do with steroids and everything to do with decoding the plate discipline matrix. So I think there's a lot of truth to that. And that's, Brett, what you were talking about with Thames, that, you know, just the command of the control of the strike zone is really impressive so far. So I'm with you guys on that. The other first baseman making news, and real quickly, just before we dive in the expert fab, is Cody Bellinger, who was just called up by the Dodgers today. I guess I'll start with you, Mike, in terms of what you think the actual role is and whether or not he's going to be up for the remainder of the season, or if this is just a temporary fix while Jack Peterson is out.
Well, our colleague Craig Goldstein, and I saw you retweeted this too, George, so you saw it as well. I mean, he had some good points about this. My suspicion is they're going to try Bellinger in center or in the outfield, and I know that sounds weird. My feeling about him is that, and again, I'm repeating a lot of Craig's points, they're going to try him for the next couple weeks, you know, with all the injuries the Dodgers have, and it's one of those situations where if Bellinger hits and he proves he can perform, they're going to try to find a place for him in the outfield. You know, they're obviously not cutting Adrian Gonzalez. They're not getting rid of him. He's not at that point of his career. But there's the other side of it. There's a risk, which is the Dodgers, you know, if Bellinger's up for 2 or 3 weeks and, you know, he does a Dansby Swanson, at least Dansby Swanson 2017, they have no reason to keep him up, and they'll send him down, and, you know, they'll milk that service time. They're not a team to do that, but they'll play off the performance is the short way of saying that. So, but he has a chance. I mean, he's really talented, as we all know. And, you know, if I had to guess, I'd say there's a 70% chance that he makes the most of his chance and they don't send him back down.
So, Brett, what type of role do you envision Bellinger having in terms of the playing time the rest of the season, and how does that translate into fantasy value going forward? And also, what kind of bid would you be making if for some reason he were available on a mixed league waiver wire? How much of your fab would you be willing to put down right now?
I'd be willing to put down probably, maybe 15%, 15 to 20% of my fab, depending on what my offense looks like. I think, you know, the thing about Bellinger is that he's going to need to hit immediately in order to avoid getting sent back down. And, you know, if he does that, then he could end up being, you know, the most valuable fantasy rookie of 2017. But if he doesn't, then we might not see him again until July or August. So, you know, there's a very fine line, and really anything can happen over the course of 2 to 3 weeks. I don't think he's a potentially elite offensive talent in the long run. I think he's a very good hitter. But I'm not going to bet too heavily on him coming up and going out like gangbusters and forcing the playing time.
Yeah.
Was he drafted in labor mix, like as a reserve? Do you remember, Brett?
He was. Jeff Zimmerman took him out. Okay. I looked last night. He took him in the reserve round.
So we won't really get to see him in terms of a discussion point next week and find out what, you know, the experts at least were bidding.
Well, I don't think he's owned in labor mixed.
Oh, labor mix. I'm sorry. I should have been clear. Labor mix is what I was asking about.
Oh, I looked in tout. Let me look in labor. This will be a good.
Yeah, I'm looking too. You'll probably beat me.
I might.
Well, that's true. You could also put on the, you know, the Spanish flea music. The technical difficulties.
He is a free agent.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's going to be interesting to see. You know, I suspect somebody in labor mix is going to go about 30 for him.
Yeah.
All right. The only other piece of news I do want to touch on, because it's brief, I promise, because he's not mentioned in the Fab Review, and that's probably because he's owned, Dan Vogelback is back with Seattle. Very excited about this. I know Wilson Karaman out there, if you're listening, Wilson, this is a great day for the Vogelback community, enthusiasts. Brett, Dan Vogelback. How excited should we be? Because I am very excited about this. It looks like he's going to have that job the rest of the year, I would assume.
Yeah, probably not as excited as you are, George. I like Vogelbach a lot, but kind of for what he is. And I worry people get a little too carried away at what his ceiling is. I think he can be a really solid first baseman. I think he could hit around, you know, maybe not immediately, but I think he could hit around 270, 280 with 20 home runs, maybe a touch over 20 home runs. I don't think he's going to be a 30 home run hitter. At this point, I don't think he's going to be a 300 hitter. I think he's just going to be good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, depending on the playing time and where he hits in that lineup, I mean, if he's hitting fifth in that lineup behind, you know, the good bats that they have, I think there'll be a lot of RBI opportunities, just because I think he'll put the ball in play a fair amount. But, you know, I have him in labor mixed. I drafted him as a reserve, and I did not put him in my lineup this week. And I don't, honestly, I don't anticipate putting him in my lineup until someone gets hurt.
Yeah.
So I have, I mean, just for reference, I mean, the corner guys that I'm playing over him are Ulysses Gurriel, Ryan Zimmerman, and Nick Castellanos. So none of those guys are coming out of the lineup for Vogelbach, but I think he's a realistic starter right now in a 15 team mix, just with the right roster composition.
What I like about Vogelbach is I think I like him from more of a long term standpoint. You know, it's that power and plate discipline type of profile, and I think that once he settles in against major league pitching, the power will start to come a little bit. And you know, it might take some time, but it's the type of skill set that I think really works, especially if you're in an on base league. Like, he's going to be pretty good for that. Mike, do you have any Vogelbach thoughts, or should we move on? Because
I think you guys covered it. I mean, he's going to play. You know, Danny Valencia has stunk and really should be batting mostly against left-handers, it looks like, again. So he's got the opportunity, and I pretty much agree with Brett. I know I've been a wet blanket on Vogelbach, but if he has the opportunity, I think what Brett's saying is realistic.
Very good. All right, so a little bit of housekeeping here. You can read all of us at baseballperspectives.com. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mike is at Mike Gianella, and I'm at George Bissell. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or whatever app you use to listen to the show. Let's do Expert Fab, guys. And Mike, I'll let you guide us through it, because there are some interesting names on this week's list and some guys that got picked up in mix that we've talked about a little bit on the only side, but we haven't talked about with Brett. So take it away.
That's true. So I'll start with labor mixed. And, you know, Brett, George, you said that, you know, you want me to guide this. But Brett, since you're in labor mixed and, you know, you've had some moves to make there, we'll start with Trevor Rosenthal. So Trevor Rosenthal went for $11 to Scott Pianowski of Yahoo. You know, and Scott's in that unfortunate position that I think we were in, you know, one of the years we were in labor where he just doesn't have a closer. He had a pretty ugly combination, you know, quite honestly. He had Genmark Gomez. He had Sam Dyson. And, you know, Scott, if you're listening, I'm not making fun of you. I had Sam Dyson in a couple leagues and Gomez in one league. Actually, I'm sorry. He had Benoit. He didn't have Gomez. He had Sean Doolittle. But the point is now he has no save sources. So he's kind of bidding on a, you know, a flyer in Rosenthal who, you know, I don't know how much of the Cardinals you guys have watched. So I just kind of want to, you know, ask two questions of both Brett and you, George. I'll start with you, Brett. So Sungwon Oh, have you seen him pitch? And if you have, are you worried about him at all? Or do you think he's going to be fine this year? You know, or do you think he's still an elite reliever who people are just overreacting about? And I'll throw it to you, Brett, first.
I think he's mostly an elite reliever that people are overreacting about. I think it's small sample. I don't think he's going to lose this job. I think Rosenthal is a really good. I'm optimistic that the good Trevor Rosenthal is back, and I actually do kind of like this pickup for Scott, even though I do think O is pretty safe, just because, you know, the good version of Rosenthal is playable most weeks in a league like labor, even if he's not getting saves. But he's been much better lately. I'm really not all that concerned about O. You know, he's had four scoreless appearances in a row now. He's six strikeouts in his last four innings. Well, yeah, the stuff is he's still very good. I think the fact that he's only been around for 1 year is going to make people a little antsy, but I don't think people should be so antsy.
Yeah, he had two bad outings like at the beginning of the year, and since then he's, you know, hasn't been dominant in terms of strikeout numbers, but he's right at the ship. George, you're going to say?
Do you know what Sungwon Oh's BABIP right now is? It's 364. Which is crazy high. So yeah, there's a little bit of bad luck in there. He's allowing, what is it, like 13 hits per nine right now? I mean, that's just crazy. And the command has been pretty good. He's actually under two walks per nine. It's nine innings. I'm not reacting right now. He's still struggling in a month or two.
That said, you know, the BABIP stuff aside, I mean, if Wilson Contreras just gets under that ball on opening day slightly more, nobody's having this conversation,
right?
It's literally an eighth of an, I feel like now I'm the guy from the Mighty Ducks, like an eighth of an inch the other way.
I was in the car listening to that game on the way home from an AL auction, so I didn't see it. I only heard it, so I didn't have that. I actually didn't realize that. All I had was that just the, you know, line scored in front of me. So that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, he took it. He's got to wear it. But, you know, he threw 38 pitches that game. I mean, it's not like it was his, you know, 12th or 13th pitch of the outing. I think it was his 31st or 32nd pitch of the outing. And he was fine up until that point. So, you know, without that, we're not having this conversation, and no one's really all that concerned. So let's just go there.
Yep. Okay. So it sounds like we can move on from him. So the other one I want to bring up, and George alluded to this, Brett, since we talked about him while you were away when I picked him up in AL only in labor, is Jordan Montgomery. So Jordan Montgomery went for 11. You know, my take on him in a mixed format, I think this is a little high in terms of a bid. But I'm curious, I guess, less about that and more about what you think of him, you know, as a pitcher and where he's playable. Like, he's obviously playable in AL only, but, you know, what's your take, Brett, in a deeper mixed league with Montgomery?
I wouldn't play him at this point in a mixed league like labor. I still don't trust him enough. I think there are other people that I would, other people that are available or on benches that I'd rather play. But, you know, I think for me, the upside over the rest of the season isn't extraordinarily high. And obviously the ballpark and division are not great. I mean, he's not the ideal of the kind of pitcher that I'd want to take a chance on in mixed leagues, but, you know, I think he certainly could prove to be usable. I'm not particularly I'm not particularly high on Montgomery either this year or going forward. I just don't see anything all that special here.
Yeah, I don't, George, have anything new since like we talked about him like a week? I know it was the Gray podcast, we're all over the place, so maybe we didn't give him like the full treatment. But do you have anything else about Montgomery that you want to add?
I like Jordan Montgomery's odds of sticking in the rotation, I think, over the next couple of years, but I don't see him becoming anything more than someone you want in the back end of your fantasy rotation in a deeper league. I just do not see it coming together for anything more than that. That's all. Good pitcher, though.
I mean, it's funny. Some of the spin rate guys are high on him, but I agree with both of you. I see him as maybe a four, like in reality. And, yeah, in a deep mix, that makes him at best like the last guy that you run out there regularly or the streamer. And Yankee Stadium doesn't really, you know, help with that either.
Yeah.
So I'm going to jump around a little just because, Brett, you had a couple of guys that you bought – in labor and tout, so I wanted to kind of talk about that. So one of the guys you bought in tout this week was Bud Norris, and you know, I know for some people who, you know, look at Bud Norris, I called him Bug Norris, perhaps subconsciously, and look at him as — that'd be a funny nickname — but look at him as a starter and think, oh, he's a bum, you know, he's a scrub. First of all, why did you pick him up? I mean, there was a specific reason because of your roster.
Yeah, I mean, I own Cam Bedrosian and I have Houston Street on my DL. I'm in bed with the Angels bullpen. So, you know, at this point, I don't want to fall too far behind in the saves game. I'm sort of trying to piece it together on the back end. So right now my save opportunists are Fernando Rodney, Bud Norris, and Santiago Casilla. So,
quite an armada there.
God help my ratios, but I need saves. I need not to fall too far behind. I need Bedrosian to come back soon. But honestly, I think Norris is fine. I mean, I think he's an average reliever in a pretty good park, and I think he'll do fine for, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Hopefully Bedrosian will be back within the next 2 to 3 weeks. And that'll be that. And then I can drop him and never think about him again.
There's just no one else in that bullpen either. Like they picked up David Hernandez to, you know, as a setup for Norris because, you know, in a trade, I think it was at the Braves because they were that desperate for bodies. So yeah, it's going to be Norris. And I agree, Norris, you know, he's not going to light up the world, but he looks fine. And, you know, we've seen this with substitute relievers before, you know, and I mentioned before, Jenmar Gomez got saves most of last year as the Phillies closer. You know, could Norris blow up? Sure. But he could also, you know, quite easily, you know, pick up like 3 or 4 saves or 5 saves the next couple weeks. The other guy you picked up in tout was Colton Wong, and I have to say it was for 64 out of your 1,000. I didn't really review this or look at your team or your offense on the whole. So who is he replacing, and was there a categorical need there, or did you just like the player?
I really like Colton Wong. I needed someone to replace Lucas Duda, because I had already — well, it would — if it wasn't Wong, it would have been Danny Valencia. He's the other guy I have on my bench, and I did not want to play Valencia, so I went kind of heavy after Wong, shifted my roster around a little bit. I have Yanover Solarte, who I ended up throwing at corner infield, moving Gurriel to first and playing Wong at second. And Wong's eligible both at second and outfield, which is kind of useful. But he's gotten a pretty bad rap so far this season. He really hasn't been any different than he usually is. He's just gotten a little unlucky, and he's hitting at the bottom of the order, which kind of hurts his counting stats. But his BABIP, which is never a strength of his game. He's not a particularly high BABIP guy in general, but it's much lower than it should be. His BABIP right now is 238. He's a career 277 BABIP guy. He's not a 230 hitter. He's only struck out, I think, five times on the season in about 50 plate appearances. So he's going to play. I really don't think they're going to bench him against right-handed pitching. He might sit a little bit against left-handers. I think he's generally been sitting against left-handers so far. But a nice hot streak might get him in there against some lefties. Plus, on the other end of the counting stats being down a little bit because he's hitting eighth, he's going to get pitched around a little bit more. So his OBP is going to be a little bit artificially inflated. He's just a solid player who should be owned and played in just about every 15 team mixed league. So I was a little surprised. I actually don't know who drafted him and cut him, but I was very surprised to see him on the waiver wire this early in the season. So I didn't want to kind of pass up the opportunity to jump on it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been surprised if he went for like 90 to 100 based on some of the reasons that you pointed out. So in labor, it looks like you had some more modest pickups. You picked up Tim Beckham for three, and you picked up Cody Reed for one. So what was your, we know how with Reed, I think Reed was supposed to get a start, and now he's in the bullpen. And I know from talking to you earlier before the show, you're aggravated by that. But coming into the week, what was your thinking on Beckham and Reed?
Beckham, I needed a body. Troy Tulowitzki went on the DL, and I needed somebody. Oh. It was either him or Taylor Motter. I mean, those are really the only two guys that were getting playing time. I had a $4 bid on Motter, and I think he went for seven. He went for nine. So I was the $4 bid. I was the second highest bid, not quite enough. So Beckham's at least playing. Hopefully Tulowitzki won't be out for that long, but I had nobody else to plug in. So I needed a guy. And Cody Reed, Reed is sort of he's the anti Jordan Montgomery for me. I think he's certainly got a much lower floor, and you'd feel less comfortable, I think, playing Reed in an NL only than you would be playing Montgomery in an AL only. But I liked the matchup that he had on the slate before he was pulled off the schedule. He was pitching at St. Louis. It's not a terrible matchup. And I figured I could swallow that just to get him on my reserves, because I really do believe in Cody Reed long term. I think he's going to work through. I think he's going to work through these command issues, and he's got strikeout stuff. In my opinion, he's one of my favorite pitchers to have as sort of the last pitcher on your reserve list in a mixed league the size of labor. So, 15 team league. I have him in tout as well. So, I've got him kind of just sitting there waiting for him to show the signs of life that I think he can show. But he's certainly a risky proposition, and honestly, for my labor team, it's not a terrible thing in the short term that he got moved out, just because I think he's throwing eight shutout innings out of the bullpen, so I don't have a ton of risk this week if for some reason he were to gotten that start. But I was a little annoyed that he got pulled out of the rotation, just because I do really like his upside. I mean, he gave up two home runs, and he gave up seven runs on those two home runs against the Cubs. I mean, the Cubs are really good. They beat up a lot of people. There's a lot of people who really like Chad Kuhl, and he got destroyed against the Cubs.
Don't bring
worse
it up.
Worse than Cody Reed. So don't. Yeah, I'm not off the Cody Reed bandwagon. It's an annoying setback.
Can we talk about Chad Kuhl for 1 second? Because there's actually a cool stat from Adam Barry, who's the...
Cool!
Oh, God damn it. I didn't even... I seriously did not even try to do that.
I wasn't sure which, if you were actually making a pun or if you were just, it was literally just to say it was a KUHL stat. But go ahead.
That's just how I talk because I'm under 30. Adam Berry, who covers the Pirates for MLB.com, he had this tweet and said, Chad Kuhl has made 18 starts in the majors. He's allowed 3 or fewer runs in 15 of them. The other 3 have been against the Cubs. So I really like Chad Kuhl. I think he's a decent pitcher. I will never use him against the Cubs again because it seems like they just know not to swing at anything out of the strike zone. He gets behind in counts, and then they just sit fastball and crush it. So it was brutal.
I don't want to start anybody against the Cubs.
No, you can't. You can't do it. Brett, you brought up Taylor Motter. What do you make of his start so far? Because obviously he's hitting more fly balls and he's hitting for more power now, but is this approach sustainable for him? Because I actually like him more as like a speed source than I do for power.
No, I don't think this is particularly sustainable. My $4 bid in labor, given the fact that I have a literal dead spot in middle infield, probably shows how that I don't think he has a ton of upside in continuing all of this. But you know, he's got playing time, which is important. I don't think he's going to turn into just this this magic breakout player, and I think the party will eventually run out by the middle of the summer, and I don't think he's going to get much playing time by then. But for now, he's going to play.
No, I agree with that. Do you think the Mitch Haniger injury changes a little bit of that, because now he will play a little bit more in for at least
a month?
I think
it's all part of the same timeline. I think I could certainly see him playing himself out of a job by the time Haniger comes back, which, you know, hopefully be about a month from now, since it's since it looks like it's an oblique.
Yeah.
I think he'll play for the next month. I just I'm not optimistic that he'll do enough to play after that.
He's gonna be 28 in September. Oof. those are the two guys I wanted to talk about, aside from Bug Norris.
Did you have anyone else, Brett, that you wanted to talk about? I know it's a long list. Is there anyone else here that jumped out at you you didn't buy that you wanted to mention?
No, but I wanted to go back in time and talk about someone that I bought last week. I don't know if you guys talked. Did you guys talk about Jesse Chavez last week?
Probably not. I guess you didn't listen to that podcast. It was mostly Gray and I talking about New Jersey and having the I'm from Jersey, you're from Jersey experience, which I'm sorry you weren't here for. There was also a riff on, like,
guys, I'm literally in New Jersey right now.
I know. There was a riff on servers and our peeves about, like, servers at restaurants. And we probably talked for 5 minutes about Fab. So, no, we didn't really talk about Jesse Chavez.
He's better than you think.
So then why, Mike, why do people not like Jesse Chavez? Explain this to me, because I have blinders on.
Well, what I think about him, well, first of all, you're not overselling him as anything more than like a number four, you know, for the Angels, are you? Like that's pretty much.
I think he's a startable pitcher in a 15-team mix league.
Well, you know, it's funny. We're just talking about Jordan Montgomery, and I made this point at the bottom of the mix section this week, which is, you know, there's so many pitchers that go for a buck or two in that labor league, and then guys go for 5 or 6 or 7 or 10, and you squint and you're like, yeah, they're so similar. Like there's almost like a name brand thing going on versus a generic. And, you know, Chavez, he kind of came up late. He was profiled as a reliever. He was with an A's team that people didn't really have much regard for. You know, then he had that good half and people were excited, but then he slumped. So people were like, well, see, that proves my point. I agree with you. He's fine as a back end guy in a mixed league, and he'll, you know, he could certainly go out and give you a terrible start. You know, we've seen that, but we know the other side of it. He could go out and give you 4 or 5 starts where he puts up like a 3.6 or a 3.8 in those starts, and you look at him and you're like, yeah, that's, you know, with the strikeouts, like that's fine. So I think there's a prejudice with him just because he isn't a name. Like, he isn't a new name like a Jordan Montgomery. But honestly, at the end of the year, if Jesse Chavez is better than Montgomery, we shouldn't be surprised.
I think he's better than Montgomery now. I'd take him over Montgomery in a second.
I mean, in terms of his numbers, like if he's better, but see, you say that. I guess that's the point. I think a lot of people look at him and see it the other way, which is they're like, they want the shiny new toy, as opposed to the guy who at this point, you know, is making me feel old looking at this. You know, he's been in the majors, you know, since 2010 as a reliever, actually longer, since, wow, he's been with the, he was with the Pirates in 2008. This is like crap I don't even remember. And he's been a starter since 2014. And, you know, that was the thing, that year he had a 3.45. You know, last 3 years, 4.18, 4.43, 4.13 so far this year.
But that the ERA is skewed this year because they brought him in an extra inning game that when he was not slated to pitch.
Yeah, that was bad.
He has a 3.13 ERA as a starter in four starts this year with almost a strikeout per inning.
Just look at his career numbers, okay? He's thrown 628 innings in his career. He's averaging 8 strikeouts per 9. Like, he's kind of just like league average all across the board. And that is valuable in deeper mixes, which I think is the direction you're going with this, Brett. That, yeah, there's not a lot of upside, in quotes, but you can bank on giving you 100 innings, 150 innings of good production.
Although Brett might have hit the nail on the head with the problem with Chavez, which is he is the kind of pitcher who gets put in those situations, whether it's in the bullpen or more commonly at the end of a start where they're like, you know what, we're just going to hang you out to dry because you're not a prospect or you're not the next big thing. You know, he does have a career 4.52 ERA, and I'm not going to go and parse his entire career. You know, whereas Montgomery is someone who the Yankees, if he has two or three bad starts, they might be like, you know what, we're going to send you down or we're going to ease up on you a little bit. That's some of the difference. And I'm not trying to oversell Montgomery or undersell Chavez, but yeah, we do kind of see that in the – like, I don't want to go too far the other way with Chavez and say, yeah, you know, he's a great pitcher. You know, we're telling you he's going to do what he did in 2014. But, yeah, he's got a reliability factor, and he's a streamer in deep mixed without a doubt.
He has a perception.
Yeah, but he's also – he makes you break from the norms in thinking about how you view a guy who toggles between the bullpen and the rotation. Chavez is better as a starter than he is as a reliever. He has been. He's posted better numbers. I mean, if you just looked at him as a starter since 2014, so 2014, 2015, and 2017, because he did not start a game in 2016. You know, this is very back of the envelope math, but you know, he's got about a 3.85 ERA with about 8 strikeouts per 9 inning. Over about 300 innings.
That's really good.
And you know what? That's pretty good. That's usable. And he gets treated like someone who's just not. He's unowned everywhere. And I don't understand this for the life of me.
I think one of my first articles at BP was about Jesse Chavez. Like, so you're preaching to the choir here. I like Chavez.
But no, to Mike's point, the point is not to make him out to be more than he is. You know, Chavez is not. He's not an ace. He's not an SP2, but he's someone who, unless you're in a 12-team mixed league, he should be owned. And even if you're in a 12-team mixed league, he makes for a really nice streamer when he plays against a shitty offense at home.
You know, my thing with him is, and you know, I've seen this in only. He goes for a buck or two, and he's just kind of an afterthought. And yeah, it is the guys like Montgomery or the next big thing that, you know, go for 10 or 15 or 20 in fab, or you know, purchase at auction for a price where you're like, well, you know, okay, like if you get all the upside here, it's going to work out, but you almost definitely won't. But we can move on to the only. So
okay. Yeah.
In the NL, I lost Starling Marte, and the less I have to talk about that, the better. That was we did talk about that last week, and that was frustrating. So rather than putting in a big bid on any of the many wonderful hitters that you see here in the article, I put in a bunch of low-level bids. So I missed out on an Enrique Hernandez, and I missed out on TJ Rivera, and I essentially wound up with Phil Irvin, which isn't great, but it wasn't so much that I wanted Irvin. It was more Irvin was my fourth choice, and I didn't want to get into a position where I was sinking, you know, really any kind of money into one of these players who is marginal. I explained this in the piece, and I did this last year, and it's worked pretty well for me the last couple of years. I kind of prefer to wait for like a touted rookie to come up or be close to coming up and sink my money into someone like that and, you know, make two or three like big moves, you know, as opposed to being like, all right, I'm going to bid 100 on Enrique Hernandez. And, you know, we already see, you know, with all the changes the Dodgers are making, Hernandez went from someone of looking like, oh, he's going to play quite a bit. And now Bellinger's up, you're like, well, he's sort of back to where he was, where he might play, but he also might just get three or four at bats in a week.
Yeah, he's not going to play now.
Right. So, and even when he, even if he was going to play, it's like, okay, you might get lucky like you did in 2015, and he might be a fairly useful, you know, NL only power source, but more realistically, he'll do what he did in 2016, which is not be very good. Yeah. So Irvin was my buy, and my, you know, my thinking on Irvin, I mentioned in the article, he's a long shot for a few steals, and that's really what I need to replace with Marte. What's really odd about my tout offense is that outside of the steals, thanks to Jason Hayward performing, thanks to Manuel Margot being solid, thanks to a number of players actually doing what I expect them to do, I'm not as worried about the offense overall as I would be otherwise outside of the steals that I'm losing from Marte. So that's what I need to replace. That's what I kind of need to go out and get. So every move I make the next couple of weeks, barring more injuries, will be in an effort to try to replace those steals.
That's such a tough situation to be in with Marte.
I mean, and an only too.
Also, like, it really screws up the Pirates defensively too, because they essentially don't have a right fielder right now. I mean, they're playing Osuna there, but he's not an outfielder really. He's terrible. So it's bad all around.
Can you can't move him off of your reserves. He's one of your four, right?
Nope. So what happened was, here's the weird thing on the site. He's listed as a reserve, but the way the rules are worded, he counts as a disabled player. So it's not like Jung Ho Gong, who I'm carrying as a reserve. Marte counts as a DL guy.
Okay. Well, that's...
Oh, if he did, that would be a big... Honestly, if he counted as a reserve, I would have cut Gong, because I'd be like, I can't carry two guys like that.
Yeah, that's almost impossible.
Well, especially with my pitching strategy, where... You know, I've got McCarthy has pretty much been my third guy at this point because he's been so good. But I'm carrying like Trevor Cahill and Scott Feldman for matchups. If you want to hear something else funny
really good too.
Well, here's the funny thing about Trevor Cahill. If I had Feldman and Cahill in instead of Cueto and Hendricks, I'd be better off. I mean, we know how that works. You know, obviously it's just the luck of the draw in the first month, but it's just funny it's worked out that way.
I watched Trevor Cahill the other day, and he was not terrible. It was like kind of refreshing. I was like, oh wow, I didn't expect that. Yeah. So,
well, and Feldman, he's been like okay. Like he had one bad start, and otherwise he's been a reliable. The thing about Feldman is, like, you were talking about this with Chavez. I was looking at Feldman's numbers last year. And I was like, you know what? He wasn't. I think he had an ERA in the high threes. Like, he wasn't awful, which is what you think when you think of Scott Feldman. You think, yeah, he had that one big year, but otherwise he stinks. But that's just not the case. Like, he's another one who's a kind of a streaming option and only, and, you know, maybe even a mix, somebody you can kind of pluck and, you know, hope for a couple of good starts.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem with Feldman is that he doesn't have the park advantage that
right, he's a road streamer without a doubt. I know it's a long NL list, and Irvin's the one guy I picked up. We pretty much wrote off Hernandez, and this bid now doesn't look nearly as good now that they called up Bellinger. Matt Cain had a good start, then he got hurt. Do you guys agree with me that he's just not somebody you can believe in?
No, I agree.
Pass.
Okay. Alan Cordova, you know, even with the Padres having injuries and a bad back end of the roster, do you agree with me that he's somebody who just probably won't do much even in that situation? Or do you think you can expect something out of him?
I mean, I'd rather have Cordova than Enrique Hernandez. At this point, I mean, at the time of bidding, I would have reversed it, but, you know, he's interesting enough to get a bid like this in NL.
Yeah, that's true. I bid the 14 again on him and ahead of Irvin. So, you know, if that bid didn't come through, I would have been happy with relatively happy with Cordoba at 14.
The one nice thing is he's a Rule 5 pick, so you know he's going to be on the roster. Like, there's no risk of him getting sent down or anything like that. So, there's right. that.
Well, yeah, or I mean, the other thing that could happen though is he could tweak a hamstring and legitimately, and he could disappear for 3 months on the DL.
I didn't think of that.
I hope I didn't just jinx it.
Oh, no.
Zach Eflin. Now, I know that I don't want to mention my name because I don't know if he listens or not, but there was a Phillies writer who – it wasn't Matt Winkleman, obviously, but there's a Phillies writer that was talking about Eflin's, like, uptick in velocity and how he's looked solid the last couple starts. Have you seen anything in him that makes you think that he's more than what he was last year, or is he still kind of a back end NL only guy and, you know, someone who's only a favorable matchups guy for you, even in an only?
Yeah, I don't think he's a step forward guy. I think he kind of is what he is. I mean, if you want someone who it could be potentially a step forward guy in that organization, I'd take him. I'd put Eflin behind both Jake Thompson and Nick Pivetta.
Yeah, and in the interest of full disclosure, I got sucked into Eflin a little bit in tout last year, so I'm a little gun shy. But, you know, Eflin, from what I've watched him a few times, you know, living here, he has a good fastball. He just doesn't have much else. And you see it, like, you see hitters when they figure that out, they're like, all right, well, you know, I'm just going to lay off the fastball, or I'm going to lay off the off-speed stuff and just time the fastball. And that's what happens to pitchers like that in the major leagues. And then one more in the NL, TJ Rivera, is there any chance at all that, you know, he's going to replace Jose Reyes at some point? You know, I'm thinking no.
I would not say never, but I think it's pretty unlikely.
Oh, I have a fun one. Better odds of replacing an incumbent third baseman, TJ Rivera in New York or Marco Hernandez in Boston?
Well, I mean, it's probably Hernandez just because it's more likely that, you know, at some point, you know, Ahmed Rosario comes up and either is the third baseman or they move Asdrubal to third. It doesn't seem to me like if Reyes is out, like it doesn't seem to me like Rivera is anything more than a stopgap as a starter.
See, I just need a reason to bring up Marco Hernandez.
I know we have to talk about him every week. That's like an in joke now.
Carry on.
Anyone else in the NL? I know it was a pretty uninspiring list.
Not for me. No.
I thought about bidding on Rene Rivera, which is all you really need to know.
I have some AL guys I think are interesting, but they're more of like the tout AL guys than the labor guys. But go ahead.
Well, yeah, labor was really quiet. You know, somebody bid on Blake Parker when they thought maybe, you know, he might be the guy instead of Norris, and now it just doesn't look like that at all. So, you know, somebody's out $5. Yeah, the AL was really quiet this week. And yeah, labor AL, some of that as just to remind our listeners, you can't bid on guys in the minors, so that was a large, you know, part of that. It was just a really, really quiet week. You know, no bid over five bids total that were even two or more. Who are the guys in tout, George, that jumped out at you?
I think Jorge Bonifacio is interesting. I know Craig Goldstein, our minor league editor at BP, really likes him. He had a home run off Yu Darvish, which is always a lot of fun. The guy for me, actually, I think is like weird, and I don't know whether it's going to continue or not. Brad Peacock, I actually wrote about him in the free agent watch for AL only. I know what you're thinking, Brad Peacock's terrible, but he's getting a ton of swinging strikes right now. His swinging strike rate is like 20%, which is insanely high. I know it's only like 7 or 10 innings or something like that, but he's throwing just a ton of sliders. And coming out of the bullpen, doing that in an AL only, like, I'm kind of interested in that.
Brad Peacock is not terrible.
No, he's good in what they're asking him to do. It's like
he was a pop-up prospect as a starter back in I want to say 2012, 2013.
Was it with Oakland?
Had to have been at least 4 years ago. Yeah. He had a huge season in the upper minors, and now maybe 2011. This had to have been forever ago, back when he was with the Nationals.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, he was always more of just a two pitch guy, and he was very miscast as a starting pitching prospect. It was 2011. That was the year I was thinking of. He threw 150 innings in the minors, struck out 177 batters. And got up to the majors for a cup of coffee. I picked Peacock up to start him in a 20 team dynasty league that I'm in, just because I like him better than any of the starting pitchers that are available on the waiver wire. I like how Houston uses their relievers. They like multi-inning outings from their relievers, and for a guy like Peacock, I think that's really useful. And he is missing a lot of bats, so I like it a lot. I think, you know, obviously he's going to allow a run at some point, and probably more than one hit, but I think he could pitch enough and pitch effectively enough to get to triple digit strikeouts as a reliever.
He's got 15 strikeouts in 9 2/3 innings this season, which is really, really good. I'll take it. Yep. Those are my guys, Mike. I thought they were interesting.
we promised one of our listeners we would talk about Wade Miley. I know he was a mixed buy, but do you have anything to... Brett, I know of the three of us, you've been the highest on him, and I know, again, this is like relatively speaking... You know, so what do you think of Miley? Like, he had another, not as many strikeouts, but another solid outing tonight against the Rays. He did allow a couple runs as we're talking right now. Pretty much the same deal for you with Miley, like somebody who's, you know, useful as a back end perhaps, or a streamer in mix, but nothing more, or do you see anything else there?
Now, I really don't like using Miley as a streamer in mix because he's just very unpredictable. He's much more unpredictable than I like my mixed streamers to be. But that said, you know, he is a guy who, you know, I've pretty consistently felt comfortable with just plugging in an AL only or a really deep mix league and just kind of letting him go. You can't really get too cute with him. But if you need an arm, if he and arm is going to give you innings and has strikeout potential, you know, Miley's a pretty good guy at that point.
See, yeah, and tonight was just a good example. He walked six, so like the whip is where you've got to really I get really wary with him.
Well, whip's always been his problem, but you know, if it wasn't, he'd be good.
All right, Wade Miley is like a bag of marshmallows. Like, they're fun every now and then to have one. But if you ate them every night, you'd probably die.
Well, and you don't want to eat a whole bag of marshmallows because, you know, if you, even as a kid, like as a kid, I mean, as an adult, you never, but as a kid, like you get a bag of marshmallows and it's like, ooh, a bag of marshmallows. And then like after the second or third one, you're like, oh my God, this is, in theory, this is great, but it's really gross.
Are you guys pro or anti Peeps?
Anti.
I am anti.
They're disgusting. They'll never sponsor this show, so I'm not worried about that. But they're gross. Do not like Peeps. Hashtag Easter tweets. Any other stuff here, or are we good to wrap up?
I don't know. I'm watching Eric Thames right now, so and there's two guys on, so he might get number 11. He's
Wade
Miley?
No. The Brewers pitcher. Who's going tonight?
Zach Davies.
You have him active.
Just robbed the Hames of a hit.
Do you have him active in one of your leagues, Brett? I thought you did.
I do not have him active anywhere. I have him active in my home league.
Okay, he's having a nice start, and what I've seen flipping around looks encouraging. Like compared to some of his earlier starts, it looks like he's back. I mean, it's one start, but it looks like he's back on point.
Yeah, I think he'll get it together. I've had him in labor and I've been sitting him for the past. I started him in week one, and after watching him be a little tentative, I benched him. Just I've been benching him the last couple of weeks, but I am nowhere near thinking about cutting him. I still like him as a long term guy this year.
Once you get into the middle of the year, I feel like he's the type of guy who thrives in that type of profile, because if you're not squaring him up and he can get into grooves, like, he's a guy who'll give you, you know, you look up and it's the sixth inning and he's still out there. So he seems like one of those guys to me that I think kind of comes on as the season goes. He had a rough start to last year too, so I don't know how much of it is just this is who he is and it takes him a little while to get going, or what the deal is, but he went through a similar thing last year, I remember. And on that note, we'll take a quick break and wrap up the show. No more Zach Davies thoughts. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 130 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us on baseballprospectus.com. We have some really great stuff going on with the fantasy content right now. We have a bunch of new writers who are doing fantastic things. Eric Roseberry's doing the Buyer's Guide. We have the Stash List this year with Greg Wellmeyer, who we've had on the show, and there's just a ton of really cool stuff going on, so make sure you check it out over at BP. Don't forget to sign up for a super premium membership that gives you access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. BP ballpark events are back. They begin on June 17th in Baltimore. Those were a big hit last year. They're really great, so you should check out baseballprospectus.com. You can find out more information and purchase your tickets. I promise they're going to be a lot of fun. And if you go to the one in Baltimore, I believe you'll be able to harass Craig Goldstein in person. Right, Brett?
It's true. Craig will be there.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Well worth the price of admission. So you can find out more information at baseballprospectus.com. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. If you have not left us a review, what are you waiting for? You should absolutely do that. So for Mike Gianello and Brett Sayer, it's George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Until our next show, so long, everybody.
Goodbye.